Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Bringing a whole new attitude to your afternoon.
I mean, you know how it is, rocking and rolling and whatnot.
You know, two dudes talking sports.
Well, wait, listen to those two clowns.
You can't do nothing but get your roll on.
Live from News Talk 1480 WHBC.
It's a household name.
It's a vibe, actually.
Sound good?
It's the Kenny and JT Show.
Have a great show!
Here we go again, coming to you live from the corner at 6th and Market in downtown Canton, Ohio. 50 degrees on the thermometer. Tough night for Buckeye ladies' baskets last night, Kenny.
Yeah, watched the entire game, and, you know, through a half, they were right there, and Taylor Mikesell had a great first half as she was open in the first half. And then what did Virginia Tech do? They said, okay, no, we're putting somebody right up on her because we know she has trouble creating her own shot, and we're going to take away that three-point shot. She was the only Buckeye to make a three-pointer yesterday. So they said, you know what, if we take that away, that increases our chances of winning, and sure enough, they did, and she led them in scoring with 25, JT, in her final game as a Buckeye, so kudos to her. But the better team won last night. As I watched it, their low post presence was much better offensively and defensively. Their point guard was equal to J.C. Sheldon, right? And their overall scoring was much better than the Buckeyes, because really Sheldon and Taylor were the only consistent scorers last night, 25 and 19, I think.
Buckeyes go 1-for-6 from the field in the fourth quarter. That was it. End of the story right there. And like you said, 7 threes that she made, most of them came in the first half. There was no scoring in the second half. And for the most part, Buckeyes, I think they got outscored off the last three quarters of the game. It was a good game. It was entertaining to watch. I enjoyed it, even though it went off too late. Man, goodness, that was a late game.
Well, the first game went long, so then you pushed the start back of that game. But a great run for the Lady Buckeyes, Elite Eight, nothing to be ashamed of there. J.C. Sheldon comes back. She's got – well, I shouldn't say she's coming back. She's got another year of eligibility. We'll see if she accepts it. I think she will. I haven't talked to her dad yet, so I'll give him a few days and talk to him about it. But she's got another year coming off the injury that she had this year. I think she'd like to come back for another season. Some nice young players returning on that team. And Taylor Mikesell now off to the WNBA more than likely. She can shoot, so somebody will take a chance on her in the WNBA. JT, I saw Jackson High School sent out a tweet. 2,000 points in high school, 2,000 points in college. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
so she can fill it up. And there's a, you know, we see how many different teams in the NBA, JT, have those spot-up shooters, right? Because guess what? There are a bunch of girls in the WNBA that can create their own, and you have to double-team or collapse on them, and that's where Taylor Mikesell comes in as a catch-and-shoot wide-open three. She can play in the WNBA, no doubt in my mind.
So it sets up the Final Four, LSU versus Virginia Tech, Iowa versus South Carolina. South Carolina undefeated. That's going to be a great game. That game goes off at 9 o'clock Friday night. The other game goes off at 7 o'clock, and it's good baskets. And you know what really makes you say that it's really good baskets?
What?
Is the fact that fundamentally these girls, in my opinion, are better than the guys that I've watched in the Final Four so far.
They have to be, because they're not as athletic. So they have to rely on the fundamentals. Now, they're getting more athletic, you know, as the years go by. We see women dunking basketballs now, you know, 10, 15 years ago. That didn't happen. We're seeing girls being able to, you know, double pump, double clutch in midair and do some things they weren't able to do when I was, you know, in high school and college playing and watching the women play and everything. So the game is evolving. Right. But, yes, the fundamentals, and Joe Tate always used to say this, the WNBA fundamentals were better than the NBA fundamentals, and that's why.
And I might have made a poor choice of words there. I should have said, forget about fundamentals. They're better shooters. The women are much better shooters from the field than the guys are, from what I've seen.
Yes and no.
They shot better than Tennessee last night, and even though each team was floating around 40%, that was better than Tennessee. And like you said numerous times on this program, Tennessee's downfall is they can't shoot.
Right. Yeah. No, I will say this. In college basketball, it might be accurate. In the pros,
oh,
no,
because yeah,
you've got some sharpshooters in the pros.
Forget about it. That's the difference between the pro game and the college game. Yeah. And even though when we look at the Cavaliers and say we need more help perimeter shooting-wise, any one of these guys would be a standout on the Cavaliers if they were still in college.
Yeah. So, fun season for the Lady Buckeyes. I'll be watching both the men's Final Four and the women's Final Four Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Because the women play play Friday night, the Final Four, and then Sunday is their championship game. The men play Saturday Final Four, and Monday night is their championship game.
Yeah, that's that wraparound weekend one. If you ever get an opportunity to go to a Final Four and you don't have a rooting interest, the key to it is to go for the Monday night championship game, because one of those losers in the semifinals is going home, and they're not staying the weekend and then going to another game on Monday. There's a lot of tickets. There will be a lot of tickets floating around Monday afternoon in Houston.
Yes, because the two losers, they're not sticking around, those fans. They're not paying for another night at the hotel and everything, even though, JT, guess what? They have to buy those tickets in advance.
You have to buy the book.
You've got to buy the book. So they're trying to get some money back on their tickets, and you can get them probably at a discount price just because they want to get the heck out of wherever the Final Four is being
held. So what you do is you hope, you keep your fingers crossed, you can get a flight, and then you give the tickets to Uncle Mike. He resells them for you.
There you go.
Been there, done that.
I bet you have.
But you're going to give me those tickets. I'm going to give you these tickets. I'm going to sell that ticket, and then you're going to be up in the bleachers somewhere.
Hey, whatever it takes, right? Yeah, whatever it takes. Make some money off that sucker. That's what you want to do. So, yeah, a good season, like I said, and best of luck to Taylor Mikesell in her next endeavor. Yeah,
I didn't expect that.
More bad news. Lady Buckeyes lose, and the Guardians lose Tristan McKenzie for up to 8 weeks with a strain in his shoulder on his throwing arm.
That's interesting, too. He's going to be they did the MRI. He'll be shut down for the throwing at least for 2 weeks and then reevaluated, which tells you there might be some light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe it's just precautionary. The good news, though, with the Guardians is the fact that they're trying to see if lightning hits twice. Before the season started, what did they do?
They signed Jose Ramirez.
This year before the season starts, and they get underway Thursday night, you're seeing an extension, Andrés Giménez, first-time All-Star and a Gold Glove second baseman with the Guardians, finalizing a long-term extension, could be 7, could be 8 years, could be worth as much as $128 million.
Is he worth that? Have they seen
That's
enough
a
to
great
say
question.
He's worth it? Right?
I
don't know.
1 year, right?
Pretty much. I mean, he had a decent year the year before. With the Mets, but established himself as an All-Star midseason, Gold Glove winner at the end of the season, great clubhouse guy and everything. So I don't know. Jeff Passan, I think, put this out there today from ESPN. When he threw that out there, it caught me by surprise because I saw somebody tweet out another contract extension for a Guardians, and I'm thinking Shane Bieber. They got Shane Bieber done. Hallelujah. Right before the start of the season, your best pitcher, they get, and then I go there and I saw that it was Giménez, and I was kind of disappointed. And then I started thinking, is Giménez worth a multi-year extension?
He is. If you consider the fact that he's really a shortstop and they might consider moving him to short, depending upon what they do at shortstop in the next couple of years. It also it includes a buyout option into this contract as well. And I think they know more about their players than we do. And if you wanted to extend someone that long, I think I'd rather extend a position player than a pitcher. Because as you just saw with Tristan McKenzie, if this is an up-and-down season with Tristan and that shoulder ends up bothering him all year, it's going to be like 2 years ago when Shane Bieber was on the shelf almost the entire year, right? That doesn't do any of us any good.
Yeah, so reportedly 7 years, thank you, Billy Beebe, 7 years for $106 million, okay? So if you do some quick math on that, seven goes into 36, or $15 million a year.
And it's got escalators in it. So if he hits certain numbers and everything up, it could pay as much as $128 million, and they have the rights to the eighth year, and then arbitration into the ninth year, however that works. You got to be a rocket scientist to figure these numbers out.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Last year, 297. The year before, made his, it wasn't his major league debut with Cleveland, right? But his first year with Cleveland, played in 68 games, hit .218. The year before that with the Mets, .263. So
right.
Based on last season, it's raised his career average to .272.
Okay, here's the problem. Jimenez, what? 2 years ago when they first got him here, they started him off, they sent him back down to Columbus, came back up, and then he finished out the year. There was no guarantees that those two were going to end up being starters and contributors to this rise of the Guardians baseball team to whereas they win their division last year. That was a great season. I, like you, I started to think exactly like you when I saw the extension. Is there enough? I mean, what are you going to do? Who's next? Stephen Kwan?
Yes. There's a list of guys that I saw on Twitter that they are talking extensions to. Tristan McKenzie, even though he's hurt, I would hold off on that. Stephen Kwan is another guy that they're reportedly talking about an extension with. And they like to do this right before the regular mm-hmm. season starts to see if they can make a splash and get everybody excited right. And also lock up some guys for the future. So we'll keep an eye on those two names, Stephen Kwan and Tristan McKenzie, in the coming days.
Yeah, think about Tristan McKenzie and an extension, and it makes you go back to when Trevor Bauer, before all the off-the-field issues came up, why they wouldn't extend him. And we know he wanted a series of one-year deals. But I have to believe that money talks. And had they come to the table and said, we'll offer you the kind of money that they're offering maybe some of these other guys, there's a possibility that maybe he would have stayed.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Right? And who knows? Maybe he doesn't get into the situations that have forced him to pitch in Japan now. This team, here's what they're doing. John Hart started this with Mark Shapiro way back in the day. The blueprint for success mm-hmm. when they moved from Municipal to then Jacobs Field. And that blueprint was, okay, we control their arbitration years, so they're not going to make a lot if they just elect to stay with that. Let's maybe pay more than they're worth right now and get them for multiple years, but it saves us on the back end should those guys end up being all-star caliber players. So what this tells me is, this tells me they believe that last year wasn't a fluke with Jimenez, that they think he is going to be either a second baseman mm-hmm. or shortstop of the future for this team mm-hmm. at an all-star level. So, therefore, they're willing to pay him more now than he's worth based on what they could pay him, but save in the long run on the back.
If nothing else, you know you've got a good glove in the outfield. He's a gold glover.
Yeah,
if nothing else,
shortstop, wherever.
You go back into the 70s and you got another Frank Duffy on your hands that can't hit the Mendoza line, but you know he's got a good glove. And, you know, part of the bad thing with the Guardians and the Indians was defensively they stunk the last couple of years, with the exception of Frankie Lindor and that side of the infield when you had Jose Ramirez. It's been musical chairs at second base. I mean, even Kipnis wasn't really a true second base. He wasn't a great second baseman defensively.
Yeah, Kipnis was not. He was sometimes a liability, especially later in his career he was a liability, Kipnis. Mm-hmm. So, here's the thing. What do they do with Ahmed Rosario, right? That's the one I'm curious to see what they do.
Keeps
because
hitting.
If he does, then he stays and he's your shortstop. But if you think, another team out there will offer you something, then you can move Jimenez to short and you don't have to worry about it. Or you can Gabriel Arias, who made the roster for opening day, is your utility guy. He can play short. So they've got some options up the middle. Mm-hmm. And they seem to think that Jimenez is the real deal.
I was reading an article today. It's the first time you can look at this team and say, basically, defensively, the Guardians really don't have any holes right now. If you consider last year, the holes were first base.
Yeah.
Maybe catcher at times.
Well, no,
outfield
that's what they
was
did
solid.
Good.
Yeah,
that's
the outfield was solid. I think defensively, they were pretty good last year because we've always had issues with our outfield. They seemingly have not locked it down, depending upon how good defensively Oscar Gonzalez can become. He's better right now offensively than defensively, but he's got a laser for an arm, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's
got
a good glove.
No, that's what we're going to find that out. Zach Meisel tweeted this out a little bit ago, JT. The Guardians are in advanced negotiations with multiple players on contract extensions. Among the players they've discussed a deal with this spring, Andrés Giménez, looks like it's coming to fruition, Ahmed Rosario, Tristan McKenzie, going to get a new deal when he's healthy, Stephen Kwan, and Trevor Stephan. So those are the right. guys that they are or have had discussions with, still are having discussions mm-hmm. with, of extending their contracts. Good. And again, paying them a little more than they're worth now, but on the back end, it benefits you.
Nice young team, no egos, nobody there bigger than the game, nobody there bigger than the jersey as we've seen it shortstop the last couple of years. No Frankie Lindor's on this squad, right?
No Frankie. What?
No egos.
He was a good clubhouse guy?
No, I definitely don't think he was a good clubhouse guy from what I saw. But again, his ego was bigger than the team. He put himself ahead of the Indians.
His last year, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, his last year, probably. I still love Frankie Lindor. He's a hell of a player. One of my favorite players to watch in the game is his love for the game. But, hey, as we're learning in sports, JT, owners are about making money, so why should
why
the
not?
Players be about making money, right?
It's hard because as a fan, you've seen this so many times as an Indian fan. You've seen your favorite players be ripped away by a checkbook elsewhere. And it's nice for a change that you can finally find ownership that's willing to go. Hey, kudos to the Dolans for making this happen,
yeah.
for even attempting to have this done. Because whether or not it's a good move or not, at least they're making the move. And they're not giving these players a chance to just simply walk away. So I say kudos to them. It's good for the players. It's good for the fans. And now you can rest assured that this kid's going to be in a Guardians uniform for the better part of the next 6-7 years, right?
Is this Wolf Blitzer money?
We still haven't heard anything. Online
Wolf Blitzer money? I don't know.
Who told us the other day that he's still listed as an owner, a minority owner of this
we
team?
We talked about it, yeah. It
but
was
nobody's
listed
ever
in that
said
Forbes
anything.
Magazine. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is.
Does
there.
He want it to be kept quiet?
Maybe. Low
because
profile?
When you think about this thing, now remember, Blitzer was part of the ownership group of the 76ers, correct?
Yes.
Josh Harris with the 76ers, along with Magic Johnson, or in negotiations. Now, this Harris already owns who? The Devils in the NHL? I think it is. And he owns
sure.
the 76ers.
Okay.
They're trying. They put in a bid. Get this. For $6 billion, they put in a bid for the Washington Commanders. There's no telling whether or not Daniel Snyder is going to accept it or not. $6 billion. I think I'll wait for a little bit more. I'm worth that much. Are you kidding me?
Boy, can you pass up $6 billion?
I guess
with
if you're
all the stuff that's going on,
if
right?
you're Daniel Snyder, I guess the answer is yes.
Hey, he didn't get to become a billionaire, for making bad decisions.
He's gonna hold out for more money, Kenny. He's gonna be Lamar Jackson of ownership in the NFL.
Boy, is that just a nasty situation going on?
I don't know.
You know what they're doing? They're calling his bluff.
Yep.
We're not paying you. Go ahead. We put that tender on you, and if somebody wants to offer you that money, we'll gladly take 2 first-round picks and move forward. But I think they did that knowing nobody's going to pay him that amount of money guaranteed and give up 2 first-round draft picks for him.
This is the greatest scenario of all time in the NFL. If you're a Cleveland Brown, you got to be loving this because you start thinking about what happened with the Browns, how many years ago when they moved to Baltimore? Baltimore steals our team, basically, right?
Right, yeah.
The Browns decided they're going to give Deshaun Watson this enormous contract worth over $230 million. So what does that do? That gets a young guy like Lamar Jackson, a former MVP, the gall to stand up and say whether or not he's been injured the last 2 years or not, I want more. I deserve to be on the same line. Whatever he wants, whatever it is, we know they're not willing to give it to him just yet. But what if this would happen?
What?
Wouldn't this be turnabout? What if the Indianapolis Colts decided they want Lamar Jackson? Now, if the Baltimore Colts move from Baltimore, Maryland to Indianapolis, and the Browns move from Cleveland to Baltimore, and we made them lose their quarterback, and their quarterback ends up in Indianapolis, they all got screwed. Because of the Cleveland Browns. Thank you.
So you like what Jimmy Haslam did by giving the guy a guaranteed contract to Deshaun Watson.
If
now,
it
huh?
weakens one of your toughest opponents in your division, yes.
Yeah. Let me read you something. I pulled this, and we're going to have coming up at the bottom of the hour here, Chris Easterling on with us, JT. You'll remember Chris
sure.
from his years at the Independent, and you see his stuff in the repository, now working for the Akron Beacon Journal, JT. And he's doing so as the Cleveland Browns beat reporter for the Akron Beacon Journal. So he's gone big time on us. He's made it to the big time, so I'm happy for Chris. He did an article from the owners' meetings in Phoenix, Arizona. NFL owners' meetings are going on right now, okay? And his article is about the Haslams. The Haslams sat down with members of the media and did a Q&A, answered questions, okay? And some of the questions, and we'll ask him about this, that were asked to him. Deshaun Watson, how's he doing off the field? Dee Haslam believes Deshaun Watson's diligent about his counseling. It's not necessarily playoffs or bust, according to Haslam, with Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski, and the team. They talk about the renovation versus a new stadium, those stories about the Haslam trying to buy the part of the Milwaukee Bucks, right? And they also, ask them, about moving forward with this team and whatnot. And there's some really interesting things from the Haslams that we're going to talk to Chris about and get his thoughts on. They brought up, and we'll ask him about this, the contract that they gave to Deshaun Watson, if there were any regrets, right? That does he regret? I sound like Wasque Widow Wabbit, Elma Fudd. Jimmy Haslam stands behind Deshaun Watson's fully guaranteed deal. Fully guaranteed deal. And here's a quote from Jimmy Haslam. Every team, every business has to look and do what they think is in the best interest of their team. We did what we thought was in the best interest of our team. We still feel that way. So we're excited to, if you will, have the stuff behind us. This last year, how many games is he going to play? Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Is he going to be there the whole season now? And barring injury, he should be. He's going to play all 17 games, hopefully this year and more. That, I think, alone is a bigger leap to the organization, to Deshaun, and to all of us. Meaning, I don't give a damn the ripple effect that this has had on other teams and how much they got to pay quarterbacks, because I did what I thought was best for my team.
He shouldn't. And here's something else to wonder, just out loud. This has no bearing, and I haven't heard anything, and I'm just wondering out loud. If Daniel Snyder is forced, basically, they want him to sell. Nobody can make him sell. The other owners are the only ones, I believe, that can vote to have him ousted from the league. But that's not going to happen, because nobody wants to be that person to cast that ballot. But if he ends up selling the team, and let's say he gets $6 billion, are other owners around the league looking and saying, hey, wait a minute, man. Okay, I want to buy the Milwaukee Bucks. Remember Ted DiBiase, the million-dollar man in wrestling?
Yeah.
What he used to say? Everyone's got their price.
Yeah.
Do you believe that the Haslams would entertain an offer to sell the Cleveland Browns, especially if they can't get a new stadium?
Yes. Without question, unequivocally.
Okay.
They are in it to make money more so than win Super Bowl championships. So if the price was right, like Ted DiBiase said, absolutely they would.
But there are only 32 teams in the league, and it seems as though these owners are trying to hoard as many professional sporting teams as possible. It's kind of like they can puff their chest out and say, I'm one of only 32 people in the world that can do this. Would they be willing to sell it no matter what the price tag is? There's a reason Daniel Snyder hasn't sold yet, and I believe it's ego.
That very well could be. And the other thing to factor in with Haslam is, and I hate to go this route, but Randy Lerner eventually sold after his dad passed, right? Mm-hmm. He took over and didn't want to handle. So the younger guys would take over, JW and some of the other, they may not want to have the day-to-day operations and look at a $4, $5, $6 billion price tag that somebody's willing to pay and say, you know what? I want out. Let's cash in and move on, and we can still have the Bucks and the soccer team in Columbus.
They got to still be making money, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
They got to be making money.
Without question.
This isn't like baseball. They've got the network money behind them. They've got the sold-out stadiums. Now, I know they only get 8 games a year, maybe less if they have to play out of the country, but that's amazing. And I'm wondering if somebody would ever go up to the Haslams and make them an offer and say, you know, we want to be one of 32, and why don't you bow out? I don't know that they would do that. I don't know if they would accept an offer, or maybe price it so high that maybe nobody could reach that number. I don't know.
And you know what else may help them decide to sell? If the price was right, and after a couple of years, this Deshaun Watson thing goes bad, it doesn't work out, and they look like horrible owners, buy low, sell high, that could force them to sell. We'll talk more about this coming up next. Chris Easterling is going to join us. Browns beat reporter, Akron Beacon Journal. He's in Phoenix, Arizona at the owners' meetings. We'll break this all down with him when we return here to the Kenny and JT Show.
It's Kenny and JT on WHBC.